Today, costs of living are up how much? Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, well known as Post, covering finance and property news. Last week, the ABS released their CPI publication, which showed price changes for all households living in capital cities. But now, they've released a series of living costs indices that show how those price changes impact the living costs of different types of households. They're known as the Selected Living Cost Indices, the SLCIs. Now, I want to discuss the different methods which are used and then discuss the specific results for different household types. And finally, I'm going to reflect on how meaningful those measures really are for real households across the country compared with data from my surveys. While the Consumer Price Index and Selected Living Cost Indices are measured similarly, different methods are used to measure owner-occupied housing. The selected living costs are calculated on a different basis because interest charges in the living cost indices include mortgage interest and consumer credit charges. And those living cost indices also show how changes in mortgage interest charges impact the costs of living compared to the costs of a new dwelling, which of course is a really weird way to measure housing costs. Overall, the key differences between the CPI and the SLCIs are, firstly, their primary use, because the CPI is primarily used as a measure of inflation, while the SLCIs more closely reflect people's costs of living. Or do they? The SLCIs measure the changes in prices of goods and services and how those changes affect the costs of living for selected household types, employees, aged pensioners, other government transfer recipients, self-funded retirees, and pensioner and beneficiary households, while the CPI is presented as a measure for all households on average. Changes in mortgage interest charges are impacted directly by changes in interest rates and indirectly through changes in property prices, which can increase or decrease the size of new loans on which mortgage interest is charged. Like the CPI, the SLCIs only include purchases made by owner-occupiers, as property purchased by investors are forms of investment rather than consumption. And of course, the one-third of households renting are not identified as a separate group. We think they should be, as our latest data from our surveys shows that financial pressure on those renting are higher than those with a mortgage. When calculating the current level of housing debt, the ABS uses a mortgage debt profile. This includes existing loans as well as new loans and represents the aggregate of all mortgage debt held by households in relation to owner-occupied housing. And the ABS also updates the mortgage debt profile to reflect changes in residential property prices over time, but with a lag, methinks. Remember that the housing in the CPI excludes existing dwellings, the cost of land, and mortgage interest charges. How does that work, we ask? And this was a deliberate change made some years ago in a policy shift that was replicated across many Western countries. This effectively made the CPI lower. And their argument, of course, was that because the CPI drives monetary policy decisions and therefore interest rates, it's a bit of a feedback loop. But to my mind, it's excluded a massive chunk of expenditure from real households. It's also worth noting that the CPI excludes the purchase of existing dwellings, as they argue those are traded between households. Since both sides of the transaction occur within the household sector, there is actually zero net expenditure by the sector as a whole. And the CPI measures price changes for a selected basket of goods and services that households consume, and land prices are excluded from the CPI as it's classified as investment, not consumption. The ABS said that all household types saw rises in the quarterly living costs in the June 2025 quarter, ranging from 0.4% to 1%. Employee households had the smallest rise in living costs of all household types this quarter. The last time this happened was in March 2022 quarter, before mortgage interest rates began to rise. Households with government payments as their main source of income saw the largest rise in living costs this quarter, they said. Employee households whose main source of income are wages and salaries benefited most from falling mortgage interest charges, which are a larger part of their spending than for other household types. Of course, not all households have a mortgage. Mortgage interest charges fell 1.4% in the quarter for employee households as banks cut interest rates for both variable and new fixed rate home loans following the RBA's decision to lower the cash rate in February 2025. Housing and food and non-alcoholic beverages were the main contributors to the rise in living costs across all household types. And out-of-pocket electricity costs rose over the quarter as the second instalment of both the Commonwealth Energy Relief Bill Fund and state government rebates in Perth were used up by households in the previous quarter. Households in Queensland also contributed to the June quarter rise as they continued to use up the $1,000 state government rebate. Rebates reduce electricity costs for households, of course. Food and non-alcoholic beverages rose across all household types, driven by fruit and vegetables. Strawberries, blueberries, grapes, tomatoes, and cucumbers saw price rises following reduced supply, which is typical at this time of year. The annual costs of living across all household types slowed this quarter compared to the March 2025 quarter. Small annual rises in living costs came with a continued slowing in the growth for mortgage interest charges and a fall in automotive fuel prices, but higher housing and food and non-alcoholic beverage prices over the year contributed to rises in the annual living costs across all household types. Households with government payments as their main source of income saw the largest annual rise in living costs this quarter due to rises in electricity costs. Those households saw a larger impact from the EBRF rebates being used up compared to other households, which meant that proportionally a bigger impact on their out-of-pocket electricity costs. Annual growth in living costs for employee households has continued to slow. It was up 2.6% in the 12 months of the June 25 quarter, they say, but down from the 3.4% annual rise in the March 25 quarter. The most significant contributor to rises in employee households' living costs was mortgage interest charges. The annual growth in mortgage interest charges has continued to slow, with an annual rise of 4.5% to the June 25 quarter, down from an 8.8% rise last quarter. And the ABS also calculated a separate pensioner and beneficiary living cost index, the PBLCI, which measures living costs for aged pensioner and other government transfer recipient households. And they say that the PBLCI rose 2.9% in the 12 months to June 25, compared to an annual rise of 2.1% in the CPI. In other words, aged pensioner and other government transfer recipient households saw larger annual price rises for housing and food and non-alcoholic beverages compared to the CPI. However, government pensions are indexed on the 20th of December and the 20th of March. By the greater of the rise in the PBLCI and the CPI over a six-month period, and over the 6 months between the December 2024 quarter and June 2025 quarter, the PBLCI rose 2.7%, while the CPI rose just 1.6%. So trying to make sense of all this is frankly confusing. We can certainly say that real costs of living rose higher than the reported CPI outturns, which were distorted by the electricity rebate schemes designed, of course, to reduce the headline inflation rate earlier and through the election. That said, the RBA tends to look through this to the underlying inflation, which remains higher when they make their interest rate decisions. But more specifically, the cost of living indicators, though providing a stylized estimate of real household costs on average, appear to me to still understate the true cost that real households are paying. I'd be interested to know what your experience has been, so do put your comments below. My estimates, using data from our surveys, suggest that pensioner and benefit households are actually seeing their annual costs rising by around 7.5% compared to the 2.9% from the ABS. Employee households are up about 9.5% compared with the ABS's 2.6%. Self-funded retirees at 6.5% compared to 1.7% from the ABS, and aged pensioners at 6.25% higher over 12 months compared to 2.7% from the ABS, even allowing for falling fuel costs and government power bill support. So I think this helps to explain why households are wary of spending and why financial pressure on many households remains a really big issue. We'll discuss this on my live show next Tuesday. In other words, there remains a significant gap, but it's an unexplained gap between the official figures, which feed into wages and government indices, and the real world. As to whether this is deliberate or a data error, well, I'll let you decide. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.